Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
It's so easy when everybody's trying to binge talk, baby. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of Binge Talking. This is my new podcast, newish podcast. If you have ever followed me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, etc., you know Guns N' Roses has been one of the most important things in my life since I first heard Appetite for Destruction when I was in seventh grade. I still remember being at the bus stop and getting Mike Arrieta's copy handed to me. And when we listened to it, Welcome to the Jungle and It's So Easy, it absolutely changed the wiring of my brain fundamentally in a way that is still being felt to this day. Now, the interesting thing about the times we live in right now is obviously we are awash in images. Everyone's a photographer. Everyone's got an Instagram account. Everyone's taking pictures of everybody 24 hours a day. But back in the day, 30 years ago, when Appetite came out, there were very few connections to this world of music. You know, when I was a kid, I would wait for the new issue of Circus Magazine, Rip Magazine, Hit Parader to come out, and I would buy it, and I would tear into it and just live for the new images of my favorite bands, either on stage or behind the scenes. And the reality of that was, back then, there were very few people who were providing those images. It was a small club. It was tough to get into. Obviously, it was the greatest job on earth. And it so happens that 4 years ago, I became friends with one of those guys. His name's Mark Weiss. He was doing a gallery show on Lexington Avenue. I always remember it. I was walking back home to go to work, and across the street, I see these amazing pictures of these big paintings, Zakk Wylde, Nikki Sixx, Ozzy Osbourne. I'm like, whoa, I've got to check that out. I walk in. David Banegas was painting away, and Mark was in the middle of the room, and I said, hey, I'm sorry to interrupt you guys, but I mean, what is this? He's like, my name's Mark. These are my photos. Do you want a shot of Jack? And from there, we've become fast and famous friends. So without further ado, here is the latest episode of Binge Talking with Mark Weiss.
From New York City, USA, welcome to the Fox 5 Podcast Network.
I'm not super into the idea of things happen for a reason or whatever, but my next guest, I'm definitely very happy he's someone who's in my life. I guess technically I walked into his life. It was 4 years ago. I was walking up Lexington Ave and the Roger Smith Hotel, which is somewhere in the 50s. I look across the street and I see all these crazy massive paintings of Zakk Wylde, Nikki Sixx, Ozzy Osbourne. I'm like, whoa, I got to go check that out. So I poke my head in the door. There's one guy sort of frantically painting. I'm like, oh God, I shouldn't be here. This guy's busy. But then I look right in the middle of the room. There's another guy, long hair, bandana on, dressed all in black. And I'm like, hey, I'm sorry to bother you guys. What's going on? This is incredible. And I look up and I see all these rock photos from my youth. Aerosmith, Kiss, Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, all along the wall. And then he goes, I'm Mark. These are my photos. Do you want a shot of Jack? And I'm like, sure. And that was the beginning of my relationship with Mark Weiss 4 years ago. He joins us here now. We've become pretty good friends, which I'm psyched about because he's a good dude and his stories are incredible. Mark, thanks for being here with me.
Yep. And yes, and the other day we finished up that bottle.
That's right. We killed a bottle at his home in Jersey going through his archive, which is a whole other story. So, Mark, just your deal, you're a rock photographer. You're a well-known rock photographer. You've been at it since the 70s. You continue to work to this day. You have a body of work that's incredible. If any of the bands I just mentioned, if that's anything you're into, you've definitely seen tons of Mark's work. He shot the album cover for Stay Hungry by Twisted Sister, Shout at the Devil, Slippery When Wet. The way you got into the business is so fascinating, though. Walk us through the teenage Mark and how you wound up becoming a photographer for your job, for your career.
Well, I used to just sneak my camera into the shows when I was a kid, like 16, and I would like bribe the guys at Madison Square Garden, mm-hmm. get real close to the stage, and then take some pictures. And then I went to the school the next day and showed all the kids in my class, and all of a sudden I got this shy kid, because I was shy, got all this attention. You know, I started going out with a lot of girls now, you know? So I was having fun. I was loving the attention. Mm-hmm. And that's really, it piqued my interest on it. Then I kept doing it and going there and developing photos. And until one day I just said, you know what? Someone asked me in school, said, I want to buy one. So I started selling these pictures out of my locker for $1 a piece.
$1 a piece.
Yeah, and I used to have signs in my homeroom or in the cafeteria, mm-hmm. saying, go to see Mark Weiss in locker 432. And I would be there at a certain time every day, and you know, I'd be like, you know, like the Fast Times. You know,
right,
selling
right.
weed, but I'm selling photos.
Yeah. In school, no one's bothering you. The teachers are fine with it. It's funny, this, you know, clearly this is a world before Instagram. You had to print them out, do them the whole old-fashioned way. But people responded to it, and you mentioned you're sneaking into the shows, and eventually you get up the courage to take your work to Circus magazine.
Right, right. Well, what happened was I elevated from high school locker room mm-hmm. to outside Madison Square Garden.
Okay.
So I used to like sell them in front of the concerts then, and Kiss was playing 3 nights, and I got arrested for selling my pictures. And all right, now what am I gonna do? And then I just said, you know what, let me look at that magazine Circus that I used to read mm-hmm. and find the address and just knock on their door and show my pictures. I was 17 years old. I said, all right, what do I have to lose? So I went there. Secretary took a liking to me, and then she got me to see the art director after a few hours waiting in the office. Mm-hmm. And he just said, I really like what you're doing, but use this film, use this, use with a flash. And, you know, he said, come back when you think you got some good photos. So about 6 months later, I got a call from the secretary. He said, do you have any Aerosmith photos? Because I hear that they really need Aerosmith photos. And I said, I actually just shot them a couple of weeks ago. I got some really good shots.
Mm-hmm. And sneaking in again in the
whole
thing.
Sneaking in, yeah, at the Giant Stadium. And I went, I just dropped them off, kind of forgot about them. And then like 2 months later, she said, go to the newsstand. You're not going to believe it. I'm like, all right. So I rushed to the newsstand. I looked. The Beatles were on the cover, October 78. And I opened up the magazine, and it was the centerfold of Steven Tyler.
Wow.
And my little, I looked at it, I said, I think that's mine. And I looked at my name down below, and it's, you know, it's like very, that was a moment.
Right. That's incredible. I mean, do you think it feels like that's the sort of stuff that could only happen back then? Like you couldn't sort of barge into a magazine, not that magazines are even that powerful anymore. You know what I mean? But, and have your work seen by someone who matters, and a few months later they call you back. Like that whole world, I feel like, has flown. You know what I mean? In
right.
the corporate structure we live in now, I just feel like that could never happen.
Oh yeah,
nowadays
you can't even get in a building.
You would never get in the building, right? You wouldn't get past security.
Yeah.
So you get that Aerosmith photo, and this is still from sneaking into concerts. When does it? So now you've got credentials, which must have been incredible. Once you start working for the magazines, you don't have to sneak around. You start getting access.
Well, I started also at the same time working for a Jersey publication called Spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy George Dassinger, that was was a writer, who I met through a school teacher in my high school, connected us because I was this hustling kid, and you know, he said, "Let me connect you with this guy George,"
mm-hmm.
and he started doing reviews of shows and took me. So that was like my first real backstage to a lot of the bands, mm-hmm. Not huge bands.
Yeah,
and
it's like Jersey clubs.
Yeah, it was like South Mountain Arena. They had mm-hmm. Pure Prairie League and Steppenwolf, not with all the members, you know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
So it was, I got a little taste there.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I got involved with Circus, then like I could like use the name to get in places.
Right.
And then my first assignment was the following year, Van Halen 79 at the Convention Hall in Asbury Park.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I started like feeling it. And I had this photo pass for Van Halen. And I loved Van Halen, and you know, I didn't have a backstage pass. I just had a photo pass to shoot 3 songs. And I just got my way backstage somehow. I saw the tour manager. I said, hey, I'm working for Circus. I showed them the picture of Steven Tyler. I took this, you know, and they're thinking, oh, if he took some with Steven.
And the tour manager, was that Noel Monk who has the book out now?
I don't
that
know.
You're talking to
him, but
might, there was that Noel. Right era, you know, it could
yeah,
have been.
Yeah, true. Well, they got me back there, and mm-hmm. Eddie was just standing back there, and I said, you mind if I take a picture? And like that's one of the photos that I'm still selling as art now, as at my galleries. You know,
yeah.
Eddie just sitting down backstage. You know,
right
very,
up
very
against
fresh.
the equipment.
Yeah,
hold
yeah.
The
so
gear
that,
or whatever.
So,
yeah.
And then they ended up using my photo they ended up using the photo as a centerfold. The three of them, it's like, you know, and then they saw it and then they gave me more access next time they played.
Mm-hmm.
And it just snowballed, the relationship with them.
No, it's incredible. We were actually going through your archive. Your Van Halen stuff is incredible. You have right from the front of the stage, David Lee Roth jumping up 10 feet in the air. So then the evolution is you go from you sneaking into the arenas to then you start getting access to then you start building personal relationships with the artists. Who was the first artist you kind of really hit it off with or, you know, started building a personal relationship with?
Probably Ozzy,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking. They wanted me to photograph Ozzy for the cover of Circus magazine. That was like my next step. This is 1981.
Mm-hmm.
I was already working for Circus for a couple of years. And, you know, they said, you know, go to his hotel, set up a background and get some good portraits. And at the same time, we're doing this little piece called Rock and Roll High School Yearbook. And Ozzy was dubbed most athletic because of his jumping around. And so I brought some boxing gloves with me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So then I get there and I have everything set up. Ozzy comes in.
And you're in like the Plaza Hotel or some fancy hotel here in the city,
Plaza,
right?
Yeah. And he comes in with a pink tutu with... You know, I was like, what's going on here? So he comes in with a pink tutu. I said, put on the gloves, you know? He put the gloves on. He's got the pink tutu. I guess most athletic. I don't know. He was goofing around, I guess.
Right.
He puts on his red. I said, put on your boots. He had these red cowboy boots.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his little tattoos, you know.
On his knees, right.
On his knees. And we did some photos. So that photo was only supposed to be like a small black and white photo. That's what I told him. And I handed all the film in, because that's you do, you get hired, you turn all the film in.
Sure.
And they ended up using it for the cover of the magazine.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, all right, that's cool. But they didn't think it was cool.
Oh, okay.
And it was the beginning and the end, and then the beginning of my relationship with the Osbournes.
Okay.
Because at the time they were like, how can you do this? It was only supposed to be for that. You're supposed to have a cool rock photo.
Right, right.
And they didn't talk to me for a while. And then he started getting all this publicity out of it, all this publicity left and right. And then it kind of turned around. And then we said, you know what, let's start doing some crazy stuff.
Right.
And that's when I got him to do an ironing shot with Amy. And he shaved
like
his
head. Like him dressed up as a housewife.
Yeah, he shaved his head. He's got the Ziggy doll with camouflage with a knife through his head, you know, with blood coming. You know, it's like I started coming up with all these ideas. And, you know, we just developed a really, really good relationship. And at the same time, Sharon and Ozzy got married and they started having babies, and I was there to document their, you know, they trusted me shooting their photographs.
Right.
So, you know, it ends up being a family.
Right. It's interesting too, because the thing is, like, you were not the gatekeeper in a way, but, you know, the better the picture you took, the more publicity it got, the higher it was in the magazine. If it was on the cover, the better it was for them.
Oh yeah.
You know, so that was sort of the thing too. So the people who did the best photos got the most access and then got to stick around longer.
Yeah, one time Ozzy and Sharon came over to my studio, and I think it was 83, yeah, 83, end of 83. And she came in and she was just gonna leave Ozzy with me, and I was gonna, you know, shoot him maybe for 3-4 hours. And Ozzy came into the studio and he goes, what's that, Mark? And I said, what? And I shared a studio with a still life photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an Easter Bunny outfit with like a whole Easter set. And I looked at it because I didn't know it was there. And I said, well, that's your costume. You're going to wear it. And he looked at me and he goes, no, Sharon. He goes, do I got to put that on? She goes, have fun, boys, you know. And that's when I first heard Sharon go, or Ozzy go, Sharon.
Oh, wow, right. Like 20 years before anyone else would hear it on the MTV show.
And then I got him to put it on. Mm-hmm. He's like, really, Mark, you're gonna make me put it on? I said, yeah, Ozzy, come on, this is, you know, this is the plan.
Right.
And then after I took it, I'm like, I looked at the film, I'm like, I gotta hide this stuff. He goes, this is the Prince of Darkness. No one can see this. So I hid it away up until like maybe 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
And I sent it to Sharon as a joke. I just emailed it to her. I said, you know, on Easter. And she didn't even know I took the photo.
Right.
And she didn't even say anything. She just posted it.
On Twitter.
Social media, it went viral, yeah. You know, it was their main page. I'm like, I guess Ozzy's out of the closet.
Right.
You know?
No.
It's like, all right.
It was crazy, because I remember when I saw that picture, I actually remember texting you, and I'm like, this is so weird, because when I was growing up, so like, say if it's 19, I'm 8 years old in 1983. Ozzy was the scariest thing on earth, with the bark at the moon, the bleeding teeth, the whole thing. He's half werewolf. And I said, that's weird that they would take pictures like that. And then that's when you told me the story that, like, that hadn't seen the light of day forever because you had to protect that reputation as the scary guy.
I didn't even show – just me as a fan didn't want it out there. You
right,
know?
You knew it was wrong for that.
Yeah, but I mean, I could have showed it to Sharon at the time. She was like, oh, that's cute. Let's throw it out there. But I didn't want to do it.
So, like, now we're at 1983, and you have studios on both coasts, right? You have
I never had it. Everyone always thought I was from the West Coast because – that's where they were shooting all the videos. That's where the bands were coming from. Mm-hmm. And that's where I wanted to hang out and party, you know?
Yeah.
And I had keys to like Kevin DeBro's house and Don Dawkins. And whenever I went there, I could stay at their house. They were on tour.
Yeah.
And I would just go and hang out and party and shoot people and hang out.
I mean, you must have been, you had the dream life. And you, at this point, you're still only like 20, your early 20s,
early
right?
Yeah. Early 20s.
And you're killing it. You're friends with all these guys. I mean, top of the world.
And I'm shooting for Men's Magazine. I used to shoot rock stars and half-naked women.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used to do a lot of them out on the West Coast, and it was for We Magazine.
Yeah.
That was Motley Crue's first national spread.
Yeah.
And so I had that going for me. So all the rockers, they loved me because I had, you know.
Right, you were bringing something to the table. It wasn't just that, like, you're living off them. They're like, wait, we want to hang out with him because he's going to take us here and we're going to do this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, you shot the US Festival, which is crazy to me. You went to the Rainbow, which is the famous club on Sunset Strip, beforehand, right? And they see you and David Lee Roth pulls you. Like, tell me everything you can remember from being at the Rainbow before the US Festival.
Not much because, you know, it's, if you remember, you weren't there.
Right.
But, this I wouldn't forget because I was at the Rainbow that week and it was like, back then, it was like a free-for-all. Everyone just kind of did the rounds at the tables. There's these booths. And so I get there and I just start, you know, kind of feeling a little uncomfortable. I was by myself and I was kind of walking around. I'm hoping to find someone that I knew with an open table that I can sit down, have some pizza, whatever. So I go all the way around to the end and all of a sudden I said, Mark, you know? And I looked around. It was David Lee Roth with like three girls there.
Yeah.
He's like, it's happening. Come on over. And I'm joining, you know, David Lee Roth before the US Festival.
Unbelievable. And that was the gig. They got paid $1 million by Steve Wozniak, the founder of Apple, which was unheard of money. And they played like the worst gig ever because they partied all day long. So you were there though, like you're in the front of this thing. And there's like what, 500,000 people. It's hot. It's hot as can be out. But the metal day was like wound up being every big artist that would come to rule the next 5-10 years. Quiet Riot, Motley Crue,
Scorpions, Ozzy was there.
Ozzy. All of them.
Yep.
And you have relationships with all of them. You create relationships with all of them. So then you wind up. So then that evolves. You get in on the ground floor with Motley Crue, and you.
Yeah, at that point, I gave them their first national exposure to America, which was that We Magazine shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly what they want to portray, you know, debauchery.
Right.
And then from there, they saw me at the US Festival, so I have these images of them walking to the stage with, you know, their booze and Jack Daniels. I just seen them walking in there with Doc and Doc McGee, the manager. I'm like, you know, I was a kid in the candy store just grabbing images that I didn't know back then were going to mean something to, you know, fans today.
Right, right. That's the thing. Oh, so you have no concept of the idea that 30 years from now, these are going to be like these incredible historical documents. You just take a pic.
I take them because I know I can get them in the Circus Magazine or Faces or Hit Parade or, you know, it was my bread and butter. You know, I would go to shows. A lot of them I would do on spec. And then I would do photo shoots. And then I would, you know, get them to the magazines. Because the magazines back then, they were like fanzines. They would do pinups and posters and things like that. So they needed content.
Mm-hmm.
And the more access I had, the more images and something, you know, I'd stand apart from all the other photographers because I had the access.
Right.
So I can basically, if I shoot them against this background, I could go cha-ching. And if I shoot them against another background, another cha-ching, you know, and it keeps adding up. So I always used to change backgrounds and change clothes because, you know, it just.
Right. It could be in different magazines, different months and keep
things
coming.
Right. I work for
everyone.
Right.
Yeah. So, all right. So now you make the first relationship with Ozzy, you get in with Motley Crue, and then you wind up being on the tour bus with Motley during the Motley Ozzy tour, which is like, has to be one of the craziest road situations of all time from everything you hear from that tour. And you can confirm that it was nuts.
Yeah, I definitely could. Yeah, it was great. You know, I was actually on doing Ozzy. At that point, I had a very solid relationship with Ozzy. So whoever they brought out, I'm like, all right, these guys are going to end up getting big. And it was usually someone that I knew already anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just, you know, while Ozzy's getting ready, warming up, I would shoot the opening band and hang out and party. And so I was kind of traveling with Ozzy. And, you know, I just felt, you know, I was there for maybe a week. And then they said, hey, Weiss, why don't you come on the bus with us? And I said, all right, you know. So I go on the bus, and as I'm, like, walking on the door, Tommy Lee's sitting in the driver's side in the you know, where the bus driver usually sits. And he's just looking at me, and I'm walking on, and he kind of puts his foot down so I can't go past him. And then Nikki's behind me, so I'm, like, in between these two guys with these deranged looks on their face. And I was like, you know, like, what's up? And he's like, Nikki goes, draw blood. I'm like, what? And I said, draw blood. And I said, what are you talking about? He started biting me, you know?
Nikki starts biting you.
Yeah. I'm like, what is he doing? You know, he's like, he wanted me to bite him back. And I guess that's some kind of initiation or something. And I said, I'm not doing that. And he's like, so then he kept doing it. And then I remember, you know, Vince, like, walking past us and just shaking his head, you know, like, like, leave him alone, you know.
Yeah.
I see Mick in the back kind of, like, looking, just shaking his head, you know, waving to me, like, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, it's going on, it seemed like for an hour, it's going on probably maybe 10, 15 mm-hmm. minutes.
Were you just biting your arm?
No, it was my leg.
Your leg?
Yeah.
Your leg. I never knew that. I thought it was your arm.
No, crazy. No. And so then they started drinking Jack Daniels. Mm-hmm. They start drinking here. I'm like, it's pain. You know, I'm in pain at this point. So that's when I started drinking Jack Daniels. He started, you know, here, it's a drink. And I'm drinking. I'm like, all right, I'm getting a little buzz now. Maybe I will bite him back. If that's the only way he's going to stop, I'm going to bite him.
Unbelievable.
I'm going to give him my best bite. You know, I bit him and they let me on. And, you know, we drank that night. And I remember me and Mick were watching the Three Stooges and, mm-hmm. you know, that's how I got dubbed Weiss Guy again, watching the Three Stooges with Mick. You know, it came on, and you hear Curly or Moe going, Weiss Guy. And then they started calling that. And that was my nickname in high school, but mm-hmm. I didn't bring it into the rock world until then.
That moment. So, and then now that's your brand. Like, that's right. How you're known.
Yeah, so then, like, that spread from me going on the road with them, mm-hmm. The photos, it said Mark Weiss Guy Weiss, and that's how that started.
Unbelievable. And you still have relationships with those guys to this day.
Yeah, yeah.
Which that's the hard part, right? To maintain the relationships over the years, because lots can get in the middle of you and those guys.
Yeah, yeah. I just did an auction for my rock scene auction site, and I asked. It was a picture of Nikki and Snake and Sebastian at the Moscow Peace Festival. Mm-hmm. I did a commemorative auction for it. And there's a cool picture they never saw, so I emailed it to them last night, and I said, hey, can you know post it around? And, you know, he's a cool photo. I haven't seen that one. And, you know, then you want to know what charity it was for and yeah. all that. So, you know, I'm getting some support with the peers that are helping me. So, yeah, everything I don't, you know, everything that I do, I'm always politically correct.
With your people, right?
Yeah, I try to, you know.
You don't spring any surprises on them, sort of give them heads up.
And I want to get the answer from the horse's mouth, not from, like, you know, a manager or a record. I want to make sure, like, if that person doesn't want me there, like the artist, you know, then I won't be there, you know.
Right.
But I don't want someone else telling me. So I push the envelope a lot, you know.
To get to the person.
Yeah, and sometimes I get cut off, you know, and I try to find another way around. And usually that person's not there in a few years. I'm here a few decades later.
Right.
So I'm politically correct where I don't piss off the people that, you know, you kind of need to get to the people sometimes.
Right.
I mean, now I have personal, like, you know, I have personal emails, phone numbers to, you know, a lot of people. So.
Yeah. And I mean, you have the equity of 35 years with these people that. You know,
yeah,
can't
there's
be
a little bit of trust there.
That matters.
I haven't done anything yet that, you know, pissed them off.
So. Right, right. That's huge. I mean, trust is the biggest thing for them. All right, so you mentioned the rock scene auction. So now you've got this incredible body of work and, you know, you've got the archive, which is crazy, which we looked at a little bit. I'm just going through it and it was flipping my lid as, you know, a kid who grew up on your images, not knowing who you were or whatever in the magazines. You still own all of the, like, thousands and thousands of pictures of every band. you know, pretty much that you've ever heard of from the start of their thing. So now, you know, what's your business now as far as, you know, monetizing the archive,
right?
And that sort
well
of stuff.
You know, you always got to everyone's got to reinvent, especially in the music business. Mm-hmm. So me as a photographer, I mean, you know, I'm still doing a offshoot here, offshoot there, but really about maybe like 8-9 years ago, someone invested some money and set up a gallery of some of my photographs. I said, all right, you're gonna put the money up, I'll put through the effort. And we did a gallery in Atlantic City, mm-hmm. over at Tropicana, and we had, like, you know, a built-in audience, and, you know, we did okay, you know, and I ended up having these huge frames, you know. We at the end we split up the photographs, and I just used those as my conduit to the next event. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got a buzz going around there, but I really wanted to, you know, I always like was in awe of like Bob Gruen and Lynn Goldsmith and. All these, you know, photographers back from the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. and these images and what they did with it. Yeah. And I never thought that my photographs would mean anything to anyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it started feeling right about then.
You can just feel when the tides shift and suddenly like the 80s is back in or whatever. Yeah.
Someone approached me in the mid 90s, mm-hmm. to do the same thing. I'm like, no, this is no one's going to want to buy my Motley Crue or Bon Jovi or Ozzy,
right, because the 80s was way out of style, particularly, you know, early 90s, mid 90s, Seattle came in.
Yeah, and those people that would be potential buyers, they didn't have the money yet, probably. You know, I don't know, because it's you know, it's not like, you know, a dollar anymore. It's $1,000,
right,
or 500, or
right,
or 3,000. So I kind of just put it aside, and then so I started branding myself about 8 years ago, and it's just, mm-hmm. a steady brand. Then I started getting involved in Lunch Break, which is a Red Bank like soup kitchen that was, you know, help people in need of, you know, that in need of food and whatnot.
Right, right.
So I started getting attention by auctioning off my photographs through them.
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting, you know, a lot of buzz, again, a little attention. And I started seeing people were bidding like $400-$600 on these photographs. So I'm like, all right, maybe it is starting to feel right.
Right.
And so just ever since then, I just, you know, just looking to partner up with different charities and whatnot. Like, you know, there's a foundation called Rocket Live that I still work with in New Jersey. Little Stephen Van Zandt is on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Musicians friendly foundation. And Light of Day, it's another event that happens. And now I'm actually putting all my eggs in Why Hunger, which is Harry Chapin's organization that started 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And they're just I just found like the perfect company foundation that they take grassroots of, and they don't just, you know, give cans of food away. They teach people how to, you know, live in today's world and eat, mm-hmm. healthy. So
what's the draw? Because the hunger seems to be like a common theme through your charity work. Like, what led you there in the first place? Or...
You know what? You always, like, just today coming up here, there was a guy lying on the ground and next to the mailbox, and he was just like slumped over, and there was a dollar right by him, and he wasn't asking for handouts. He was just lying there, and people were like putting money on, mm-hmm. there, and I just looked, and I'm like, that's why I'm doing it, you know, mm-hmm. and so that's. That's really it in a nutshell.
Right, you know, it's like core level humanity type thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and not everyone's just wants, you know, you always think that people that ask you for money, they want money to buy alcohol,
mm.
you know, and that's a, you know, misrepresentation of homeless people.
Right.
They want food, you know, so they actually have a hotline, anyone in the U.S., it's 1-800-5-HUNGRY. You can call it, and they have a database that's incredible where they can just, you call them up and they'll tell you where to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So it's great to be able to use your work to help, you know, charities like that
yeah,
are important.
It's good.
Interesting hearing you say that you really had no idea, because on a surface level, the 80s, it was very superfluous and fun and party and spandex. The idea that it would be viewed someday later in a historical sense, even that never crossed your mind,
hoping,
even your mind.
I was hoping, you know.
Yeah, in the back of your mind, but you didn't know.
I didn't know my Guns N' Roses photos were going to be like the Rolling Stones photos from back
then. Totally.
And I still don't get it, but I see people buying them on the auction, like, and bidding them up. I'm like, the picture in front of CBGB's, all right, this is becoming an iconic photograph.
Yeah.
The picture of Ozzy in the bathtub. This is becoming an iconic
totally.
Photograph. When people are talking about it
yeah.
and referencing it in people and things, you know, and
right, because you gave me one of those. The CBGB GNR thing is like the prize thing in my apartment. Mm-hmm. I've got it framed with the ticket stubs and everything. You're right, that is iconic. It's 30 years ago now, too.
Right, right.
Yeah, we just
finished an auction, and it did really well, you mm-hmm. know, so... Yeah.
Yeah, your work, it's we went through the archive this weekend too. Remember you were dealing with the cable guy or whatever, and then you came back. I'm like, "Mark, this is the most important photo I've ever seen of yours," which was Axel and Aaron Everly. I'm like, "That sweet child of mine." You're like, "What sweet child?" I'm like,
"I didn't even know."
He wrote it about her, dude, and it's both of them sitting at the Sunset Grill. She's in her sunglasses. It's I never seen that photo before. I don't think you've ever done anything with that photo.
I don't think I've ever seen it either.
Right.
Until
right.
you showed it to me.
Right. It's incredible, and I can't imagine how many more of those you have
know,
in your computer too.
I can't wait to like sit down and look at my photos, like you know, because I do get pleasantly surprised.
Yeah,
like there was a picture of Jon Bon Jovi that I was just going through my files, and it said The Rest, and I'm like, "What's The Rest?" I said, "That sounds familiar. I just saw John's book, and he mentioned that he was in a band called The Rest." I'm like, "Did I shoot John when he was like 18?"
Oh, wow.
I went to my files. I was shooting Southside Johnny, and I looked in the files. And there was like, you know, maybe 20 photos of John as a teenager, and that will be in my book that it's coming out.
That's know. Incredible. And do you get that to John? Do you somehow reach out to him and be like, "John, I found this picture of you when you were 18. Have you had any yeah. interaction with him over that?"
I didn't want to email. I figured the next time I see him, I'll show it to him on my phone. You know.
Yes.
So I saw him a couple years ago at an event, and I showed him, and he goes, he went to his wife. He goes, "Let me have your phone, Weiss." He took my phone and just, you know, couldn't believe it. You
right.
know,
it's like, incredible.
I didn't know it was him. And then, you know, I thought the first time I shot him when they opened up for ZZ Top in Madison Square Garden in 83.
Yeah.
And now to have that is like unbelievable.
Right. And I guess we're getting near the end of our time. But the one funny story that is the greatest is you have the worst memory ever, for real. And so finally, like, you'd always be like, "Yeah, I don't really remember that." And I would sort of pepper you. And sometimes, like, if you post something, like, "I don't think that was 86. I think that was 89. You're like, "You're right. Thank you. Thank you."
Yeah.
So finally, I'm like, "So, like, what was the deal with your memory, man? Like, were you, like, were you a crazy junkie or something back in the day?" And you're like, "Oh, no, I had a dirt bike accident when I was 12. I can't remember anything."
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, right. It's such a weird story. And right. I don't mean to make light of it, but,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
just what, and, like, maybe. It's almost like you live a lot of your life on Ambien. Like, if someone tells you you did something, you'll remember it, but you won't recall it initially, right?
Well, not even that, because I won't remember it.
Uh-huh.
If they tell me, because whenever I go, like, and see an old friend from back in the day, I'll tell them to tell me those stories, because they said, you know, something would bring up an old memory, and I don't remember it. I said, "That sounds like a good time. Tell me the story, and tell me what I did, you know?" And then the more they tell me the story, the more it would be part of my life, which is why my book is taking so long, because I'm really like reaching out to all my old friends and my photographs and trying to do a timeline every year and trying to put it together so carefully so that when I have it done, I'll just keep reading it and looking at the pictures, and then I'll start being able to remember my life. Like, and hopefully if I keep reading it enough, it will be a real memory. Is that weird?
Isn't that incredible? So you have to piece back together your life. Thank God you're a photographer. I mean, what
right?
would you have done if you weren't?
Well, you know, it's like I'm missing out on a lot of good memories. I'm jealous of a lot of people that have memory, you know,
yeah.
because it's like, but yeah, so I am thankful for my...
And that's an ongoing thing. Like, so if the dirt bike accident was when you were 12, I mean, you could still not remember something from like 5 years ago. That's just an ongoing issue.
2 weeks
for
ago,
you.
I probably wouldn't remember anything.
No, you know? Kidding.
Yeah, unless I'm reminded or something, and you know, or you know, like I never get in fights with people, because I remember I was at a party in the 80s, and they were like, why are you not talking to that person? And I said, "Well, why wouldn't I?" He goes, "Well, you just got in a fight with him like a month ago. Like, you remember having it out with him?" I'm like, "Not really." I goes, "Oh, that's why he was acting weird."
Right.
You know.
It's like a great way to go through life on one level. With that, you don't remember to stay mad at people, but it's yeah. crazy on the other level. And the other funny story you told me related to that, too, was like when you first started shooting Metallica, what you would keep calling Lars the wrong name, and they would crack up,
right.
and you just had no idea because you can't remember the name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, then at the end, I'm like, "Why are you guys supposed to be like death metal or, you know, like heavy, really, you know?" why are you smiling every time I take your picture? He goes, that's not George, that's Lars.
You call Lars George.
And then ever since then, I said, all right, this is not good. I need to, like, make an effort to remember their names. So ever since then, I would get a piece of tape. Well, before tape, I would, like, just write their names on my forearm. And as I'm, like, taking the photograph, I'm like this, and they're not seeing where I'm looking.
Oh, my God.
And it has their names, like, you know, left to right, you know, who's who. And then sometimes I get it mixed up, you know, so because they would switch around. I'm like, mm-hmm. All right, now which one is that? You know, because it's not in the order anymore.
Oh, right.
So then I would just yell out the name. I said, all right, George, move to the right. And, oh, that's George, because he moved.
Yeah, yeah. You'd make him move.
And I didn't want George to move. I wanted Henry to move.
Yeah.
So then I'd have to go back and go, oh, no, that's good, George, but Henry, you move over to your right. You know, it's like I still do it.
I mean, that really is like you've seen the movie Memento, where the guy writes everything on tattoos, everything on his body. You must have tripped out when you saw that.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, wow.
I was like, maybe I should get tattoos.
You're right, right. You don't have any ink, do you?
I don't.
You made it through without.
My son does, but I don't.
Right, your son's got full sleeves now.
He's inked up, yeah.
Yeah. So, and you know, where do you want to end it on? So we talked about. So you mentioned the Rock Scene Auctions. Just tell us more about that. Yeah.
Well, I started Rock Scene Auctions because I was kind of like, you know, I do make sales. There's galleries out there. Mm-hmm. There's online sales on my website. But it's really hard to get them to spend, you know, $500, $1,000. And I must not be the only one. But, you know, every time you get an email from a gallery or on your website, they want a photo of this one or that one. You go, wow, you know, it's a good feeling, you mm-hmm. know, and you get money, you just print it out and you sign it and you send it to them. But it doesn't happen often enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wanted to, you know, get more. You can't lower the price, you know, because if you lower the price, then you're compromising your retail value and then it's hard to get that price.
Right, right.
So I'm trying to come up with a way where...
And with galleries, you're already splitting 50-50 or whatever.
Exactly.
So you got to keep that number real.
Yeah,
right.
So you got to stay there, let that mm-hmm. be your number. And let's find a way to not compromise your value of your integrity of your price.
Right.
So I came up with a thing where, you know, just like an auction, you know. So you, let's say I have photos up there that's $1,200 is value, 17 by 22.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start it at $200, you know, let it bid it up, you know. So people that can't normally afford that much might go for 200.
Right.
They might get outbid to another bidder, but maybe they'll get lucky and, you know, and mm-hmm. right now in the beginning stages of RockSceneAuctions.com, you know, I'm just getting the word out. So now is a good time to go up and to get some collectible art.
Right.
And I'm not the only photographer. Like I feel like I'm an advocate for other photographers. Mm-hmm. There's other people out there that are, I talk to them all and they're like, yeah, we're just kind of waiting, you know, we don't know what to do. And it's like, you're just waiting around. So look, this is a 3-week auction. Let me have at least 10 photographs, 10 to 20 photos. And in 3 weeks, if not all of them, if not, you know, 10 or 15 or not, maybe not all,
mm-hmm.
might get a minimum bid. And that brings in a chunk of change. And then we can do it again in a few months after other photographers do it.
Right.
And then it goes into like a buy it now kind of thing. So, and then Why Hunger gets a good chunk of it too.
Sure, sure.
So it's a win-win on everything, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's working out good.
That's great. And you're still shooting and everything till this day.
I just shot, Gene and Paul from Kiss, they just did a grand opening they have Rock and Brews.
Mm-hmm.
They hired me for the events. You know, I'm not really an event photographer, but it's always fun with those guys.
I mean, they fly out on a private jet and everything. It's like cool gig, right?
Right.
Not
bad. Oh, yeah. I get to bring my girlfriend, Michelle.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun.
And they're psyched when you bring your girlfriend, too.
Oh, yeah. It's fun. It's fun. I'm teaching her to be a photographer, and she actually has gotten some pictures in the Kiss tour book, you know?
That's
like,
incredible.
So you go back there. I can't be everywhere. Maybe they'll like some of your photos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Your relationship continues with these bands because you brought me backstage to Motley Crue a few years ago, which was incredible.
I did. I brought you.
I was your assistant at the final show at MSG.
Is that you?
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
You never know if he's kidding or not with that one.
I remember that because every time I see... I see Steve, he's always bringing that up.
Yeah, that's like the greatest moment of my life. We were backstage with Nikki Sixx. He's like, where was that photo? And I'm like, oh my God, this is so crazy. I tried to will myself invisible back there because it was
you.
You were cool. Yeah, no, I was trying to be cool. I'm like, I have nothing to add.
Did we go to Tommy's room after that?
We did the whole tour. Tommy's room was when you told me the story about the dirt bike, when I was finally like, so why don't you remember anything?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. And you were like, I had a dirt bike. I was like, oh, that's so much, you know, less crazy than I thought on some level what was going on there. But I mean, you have that enduring relationship because, like, they go on. You gave me that T-shirt, the Motley Girls, 30th anniversary.
Oh,
that's
photo.
So,
right,
like, they kind of need to come back to you to buy the images because you own that.
Right,
so that's, like,
right.
an ongoing.
Yeah, and I never, like, you know, charge too much. They tell me what their budget is, and I'm like, all right, that's cool, but just give me 10 shirts, you know?
Yeah.
That's why I had that box of shirts,
right,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't have the budget. You know, everyone, you know, you think Motley Crue, that they got millions of dollars, but, you know, it's a business, you know. Mm. The merch guys, this is what we got for photography, you know.
Right.
And, you know, you can wheel and deal a little bit. And, you know, they're actually, they contacted me to do slot machines. And they're using some of my images for that, some prototypes and whatnot. And, you know, we don't have a lot of budget. So, anyway, it's all, you just never know where the next thing's coming.
It's amazing. Mark Weiss, I appreciate you coming in. I love being friends with you. I brag about it to everybody after a couple of beers. It's like one of the highlights of my life, talking to you.
I brag about you.
Right,
George?
Oh, yeah,
like,
I'm sure.
This is the best anchor, you know, in the world.
This is how you maintain the relationships like this for 35 years with people far crazier than me, maybe. All right, Mark Weiss, we appreciate it. Thank you very much,
Thank you,
man.
Steve Lacy.
All right, and a great addendum to this episode of podcasting. Mark and I just collaborated on a series of prints that I make. I've been into screen printing now for a couple of years. So we have collaborated on an art show, which is going to be Saturday, October 14th at Grit and Glory, which is a tattoo parlor on the Lower East Side. What a perfect venue is that, right? And I took some of his pictures, some of the earliest shots he did of Guns N' Roses dating back to 86 and primarily 1987 when they came to New York for a week, and turned them into 40 by 60 original screen prints. I've never been more proud of anything in my life than our collaboration. Hopefully you can check it out. We've got a Facebook page, Weiss Guy Lacy, and you can find it through my social media and things like that. So I appreciate Mark coming in, and stay tuned for more from him and I, one of my bros, as you can tell, an awesome dude. Take care. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. This episode was recorded, edited, and mixed by Matt Onimus. Our executive producers are me, Matt, and Ahmad Asghar. Our Vice President of News is Byron Harmon, and our Vice President and General Manager is Lou Leone. Binge Talking is part of the Fox 5 Podcast Network. I'm Steve Lacy, and if you have any questions or comments, feel free to hit me up on Twitter, at Stephen Lacy with a V, or on Instagram, Steve Lacy, S-T-E-V-E-L-A-C-Y. In the meantime, stay tuned for our next episode.
You know who you are? You're on the fourth floor, baby! You got a pod!
Tell me you were rolling on that. We could use
slowly
that.
Slowly rolling.
Were you?
I'm Alex L.
I'm Libby Delena. Welcome
to This Morning Walk Podcast.
We started this show because after our morning walks, we would connect and have a conversation, and the things that we were seeing, smelling, learning might be really interesting for someone else to hear.
We are so excited that This Morning Walk Podcast has joined Blind New Audio, a new podcast network from executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Follow, share, and listen to This Morning Walk Podcast
wherever you get your podcasts.